Hi everyone, welcome to Crowd Forecast News, episode number 188 for July 9th, 2018. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, but all timing research shows are also now available in audio-only podcast format on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Today we will be talking about the 250th weekly Crowd Forecast News report, which you should be seeing on your screen right now, the PDF version while I'm talking. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at this yet, you can go to timingresearch.com to download the full report or read the full blog version of the report. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and I have Dave Landry back to moderate today. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Thank you, David Cosmeter, and thanks to Timing Research and Crowd Forecast News for having me back once again. Looks like we've got a full lineup today. Kirk, let's start with you. Kirk DePlessis of OptionAlpha.com, first-time guest. We won't beat you up too bad today. We'd like to welcome you to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Well, we know you have a 7-week-old, so that's something that we learned right before we went live. So congratulations on that.
In the background, yeah.
And then tell us a little bit about OptionAlpha.com. Kirk?
Yeah. Real quick, my background is I used to work in New York. I thought I wanted to be an investment banker, realized that was a terrible job and lifestyle. So I got a rotation on a trading desk when I worked for Deutsche Bank, eventually moved to DC, was a REIT analyst for a while. My wife told me that I need to be at home more. So I decided to start trading at home. And that's really kind of how that progression has been. So it's been 10 years I've been trading. Started Option Alpha just as a blog. I started to share my ideas and thoughts and would communicate with friends in New York. People started asking questions. I've been on this constant journey to understand a little bit more about options and how it works. So right now we've kind of transitioned into more of a data and software company. So we buy a lot of raw data. We backtest a lot of things. We try to figure out what works. And the last like 2 years or so, we've been developing a completely automated trading platform. So we've worked very close with Thinkorswim and TD Ameritrade. We're going to be rolling that out in the next month or so, but it's literally start to finish, completely automated options trading, which I don't think anybody has in the retail sector right now. So we're really excited about that.
Awesome. All right, Simon, let's go to you next. You guys are in no particular order other than the way I printed them out or the way that Cosmeter listed them on the sheet. So Simon Klein of TradeSmart4x.com. For those of us who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about TradeSmart4x.com. And the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks, Dave and David. It's great to be back here on the show. Try and do the show at least once a month. Great show. And I think everyone watching it enjoys it. I get good feedback from my clients that watch it. So I started trading about in 2005. I actually started in the investment banking business and then moved on to the trading side of things in 1996. Straight out of university, I worked for Credit Suisse in both London and then in New York. I started in kind of middle office and then moved on to the trading floor. And I started again TradeSmart and TradeSmart4x.com is a website a few years ago. I actually started training traders a few years ago. People came to me and asked me, hey, what do you do? I'm a trader. Can you train me? I'm like, okay. And it kind of grew from there. And more and more people came to me and asked me. I didn't have any web presence or website for the first like probably 7 years or something. And people came to me literally from all over the world and called me up or got in contact with me, sent me an email and said, can you help me? Can you train me? So some of the traders that I've trained work in some of the top institutions in both London, New York and other countries. And the aim of the main focus of TradeSmart is we're a trading educational business and we focus on teaching you how to read the market professionally. I believe that the number one thing that you need to learn is how to read the market, how to read the candlesticks and what's going on. Once you've got that, then you can actually develop a strategy and learn how to actually run a successful trading business, which is like the next step. And we help people develop their own strategies from scratch that fit their own personality and lifestyle, because it's not a one size fits all. Trading's very unique in that you have to find something that works for you or find something that someone else does and make it yours. You can't trade someone else's system unless you make it yours first. So that's the number one advice I would give to many people out there that seem to be trying to follow successful traders but don't seem to be getting the same results as them. Become an independent trader who can stand on your own 2 feet. And that's what we aim to do at TradeSmart, to develop and train and help mentor through the whole process from beginning to end, wherever you happen to be in that process, and get you to the end where you're a consistently profitable trader who can stand on your own 2 feet.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Neil, let's go to you. Neil Batho, another veteran of the show from TraderReview.com. For those of us who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us a little bit about TraderView.com. Neil, maybe you're muted.
Yeah, Neil, you're muted.
Right after I graduated in 98 from college, went through the broker training program at a big firm, and I realized in our training very quickly that it's not actually the analytical stock picking job I thought it was going to be. It was going to be the job where you just transfer money from the client's account into your account and then pay you on how many assets you have under management, not necessarily how well you're actually doing with the portfolios necessarily. And but I learned a lot, got a lot of free lunches, which I loved, from mutual fund companies. I still remember one mutual fund company came in 20 years ago. And someone asked him, they said, "What's going on with all these internet companies and what do you think is going to happen in the future?" I still remember what he said 20 years ago. He said, "Amazon.com will be the largest market capitalization company in the world. Barnes & Noble will be a coffee stand." And now it almost came true. And I didn't buy Amazon stock back then. But now I run, because I was taught to diversify, right? Now I run Trader Review, started a few years later, and I use Point and Figure and the Ichimoku Cloud, and I use all my own custom queries to send out the best picks that I can to clients.
Cool. Yeah, I use your term asset gatherer all the time when I'm trying to explain things or talk to people and dealing with some of those issues on this. But that's another story for another day, I suppose. Mike Pisani, let's go over to you over at AlphaShark.com. I did get into some trouble with some of your mates over there at AlphaShark, but luckily what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But anyway, Mike, take it over there. Anything you want to tell us about AlphaShark? And I noticed you also have smartoptiontrading.com listed too. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Happy to be here. Love doing the shows with you guys. So for me, I've been trading since just after the financial crisis. And unlike you guys, I kind of taught myself here. I learned the hard way. I made a lot of money, lost a lot of money, and kind of figured it out. Eventually found my way over to option trading. And that's where I really learned that the options can really give you a good indication of what's going on in the market or what they may be rotating into or names that are in play that day. So I've learned to watch the flow and look for news and events and options around it. Like we just had an event on Snap. They started hitting the weekly calls on Snap all of a sudden. Then the news came out that they're partnering with Amazon and boom, the stock explodes. And then they've been hitting it ever since now. Like the flow on Snap has been hot and heavy into weeklies and October calls for the last little bit. So, love looking for stuff like that. And what I do is I have my own site. I have my own service. You can follow me along at smartoptiontrading.com. You come in and sign up for real-time option flow here. And join me if you'd like to. And I do some moderating over at AlphaShark with Andrew and those guys over there. So you'll find me over there for about 2 hours a day moderating in this chat room form as well. But mostly I'm on my own. I'm usually up from like 6 o'clock in the morning, start doing my pre-prep work for the morning, get the news out, reviewing open interest changes, giving you guys a video on ideas I like for that day. Somebody's mic is open, I think, by the way. And just picking up that type of information. And then every night I give you a recap on what the flow was, what was good, and generally what I think about the markets. So you can check me out at smartoptiontrading.com. Looking forward to being here. Looking forward to talking about this week. I have some big ideas for it.
Yeah, glad to have you. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Dave Landry from DaveLandry.com. I've been trading so long, I'm embarrassed to admit how long. I don't want to show my age here. I guess you could look at the camera and see the gray hair. If you want to find out more about my stuff, there's a bunch of free stuff I'll give you if you go to DaveLandry.com/CFN, and that stands for Crowd Forecast News. And right here, you get a $100 reusable gift certificate, and you'll get access to 4 videos on trading. And then free reports. And then all 3 of my books, once you get the promo code, you can get all 3 of those books. The code is reusable. When it comes to markets, I believe that you can only predict the short term, but you can stick around longer term if the trend begins to materialize. And unfortunately, if you just want to try to trade purely on a long-term basis, it's going to be really tough because you're going to be wrong probably 70% of the time, and your drawdowns are going to be abysmal. We read about these famous traders that do all these great things, but the rest of the story is a lot of times they blow up due to the steep drawdown. So the way I solve for the short term versus long term is to take a piece off with the money manager, take a bit of a hybrid approach, and then hold on to a piece of the trade for as long as it moves in my favor. I'm known as a trend follower, and somebody years ago, not very nicely, called me a trend following moron, and the name stuck. And that's actually someone, I know who it is. It's someone that that's a famous trader, and he was doing really well as long as he was following the trend, but he started fighting the trend because of his big ego. But that's another story for another day. Maybe maybe a 2-drink minimum. But anyway, you can check me out at DaveLander.com or go to DaveLander.com/CFN, and I'll give you a bunch of goodies for attending today. Kirk, we're going to go back to you. First question is, as it always is, what direction do you think the S&P is going to move from today's open to Friday's close? And then once you answer that question, go ahead and answer two at the same time. Rate your confidence to that answer by estimating the probability you have correctly predicted next week's, or this week's, I should say, market's move.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I always look at the path of least resistance, so I'm not much of a charter. I think I'm terrible at probably charting. I think I'm probably worse at candlesticks. I think a lot of it becomes subjective and you have to be really good at it and follow it a lot. That's not like my style and it's definitely not how I was taught. So I look at path of least resistance. I think the easy move up is up this week, right? I mean, like we had a great jobs number, whether you read it as a really good jobs number or start digging through and figure out if it's, subjective or not based on how they report it. But either way, the markets liked it. I think the path is up, but I think we have to break through the 2800 level on the S&P or the E-minis. At least that's what I always look at.
Okay,
want to stay in that range. So I think that's going to be us.
Cool. And if you have some additional thoughts, we're gonna circle back to this question on the next question too. So up and what's your confidence in that? Jason, that's the second part of the question.
Always probably always 50-50 with me, like 55-45.
Okay, cool. Simon, let's go to you. You know the routine.
All right. So I'd say again, up this week, probably a higher probability. It's already gone up this week so far, but that's the probabilities at the moment. I'll go into the reasons why in the next question, and I'd probably give it, I'm also a kind of 50-50 type of guy. So
okay.
I'd probably say 55% up and maybe 45% down, obviously.
Okay. And also as a reminder, I think everybody knows this, just so Kirk knows it. Kirk knows it, is that we, if you want to share screens, feel free to do so. Everybody seems to like looking at charts. So just an FYI on that. Neil, let's go to you. Up, down, and what do you think percentage wise?
I'm gonna say up for the week, about 70% confidence. Okay. And yeah, just mainly because there's no reason to sell. Like that's the only answer that I have. If there's no reason to sell, no one's gonna sell. So that's
okay.
What I'm looking at.
Okay. And if you wanna, we love looking at your charts too, because you normally have something. I normally learn something from you. So feel free to do that on the next segment. Mike, let's go to you. Up, down, and then rate your answer to that.
Well, I was a lot more bullish about 30 seconds ago before our president threw a tweet out there that just rocked the biotech and pharmaceutical market.
What was the tweet?
Pfizer and others should be ashamed they have raised drug prices for no reason. They are merely taking advantage of the poor and other unstoppable to defend themselves. No. Blah, blah, blah. We will respond hugely, bigly. Got to put that in there. If you're going to do Trump and channel him, you got to throw that in.
There goes biotech.
Huge.
Huge. And here comes puts coming into Pfizer. Actually, I'm pretty confident we're going to go higher. I think somebody else said the path to least resistance does seem higher. I looked at Friday's chart. Friday, they caught everybody. They caught every bear waiting for this trade war to start, and they squeezed the living you-know-what out of them. And you're getting that continuation today. You're in this little gap we have here. And I think a test of this 280 area is coming in this week. Do we hold that until the end of the week? I don't know, but we're going to earnings season. Earnings season, unless earnings are bad, are typically bullish. So for me, I'd say there's 70% confident unless our president comes out and really tries to rekindle the trade war again with everybody, that we're going to end up retesting this 280 area by the end of the week.
Okay. Well, we're going to circle back to you in a minute. If you want to come back to those charts, maybe something will change over the next couple of minutes. Kirk, let's go back to you. And the question, Kirk, is what specific reasons you think the S&P will be headed higher this week? So what developing events, what specific reasons? And if you feel like throwing a chart up, feel free to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I'll throw some charts up later. I don't think that there's a need for it right now because I think a lot of people can see it. But, I think for the S&P, I said, I think it's an easy move higher because there's nothing, like somebody else said, I think Mike or somebody else said, there's nothing to stop the market right now. I think the comment on earnings season, the only thing I'd be concerned about as we get into really dive into earnings season late this week and next would be what the guidance is, right? Like, so if a lot of these companies and CEOs are starting to pull back on some of their possible maybe investments because of any trade wars, whether they're actually real or not, or, they don't even know what's happening. And that uncertainty, I think, can kill. So I think it'll be interesting to see where companies' guidance is after earnings. I think earnings are going to be fine. That'll send probably the market a little bit higher, but it's the guidance, I think, that could derail it a little bit.
Okay, gotcha. Simon, same question.
Okay, so let's show my charts. Okay, you guys can see that. I'm a chart trader. I spent many years when I started trading, getting into the office 3 hours before the market opened, the equity market. So it was like at 6:30 in the morning, I was in the office and spending a few hours, you know, those hours preparing, looking at all sorts of fundamental data. And I found it really gave me no edge apart from showing me what stocks I would focus on during that day. But all that time spending looking at upgrades, downgrades, looking at balance sheets and everything else really didn't give me the edge in the end. I mean, actually, so going back to first principles and understanding how to read the charts, and the chart is a footprint of what's happening, what money's doing, and reading that and not really caring the reason why the market's moving up or down, just understanding it's moving up, I want to be a buyer, it's moving down, I want to be a seller, is kind of, I believe, the key to becoming successful as a trader. So looking at the charts, if we look at the, let's start on the weekly chart. The weekly chart, you can see, if we look at the pivots here, we've got a, you know, we're making higher highs and higher lows here. So we pull back to demand area in this kind of move. Now, the odds are here that we probably push up above this 2,800. And this is where the conditional thinking, if we don't do that, then it's likely we're going to start moving to the downside again, because we've still got this massive area that we dropped off originally, this sell-off. We still have to clear that to go higher. This bullish move up is still bound in this supply kind of big sell-off area. So until we clear that, we could still have, I mean, we could go up a little bit and then have another massive move down. That could definitely happen. Now, if we take a look now to the monthly chart, and this is one of the keys, we're still in an uptrend on the monthly chart. So if the monthly chart's saying up, then I would go in that direction more often than not until the trend here breaks. So this is going to be a key month. If we don't manage to close above this bar, yeah, then we may have a little bit of a warning sign that this may be the top, and we potentially may end up moving to the downside. So we'll know more at the end of July, depending on where this monthly bar closes, what's likely to happen. At the moment, the odds are we're going to move up until that doesn't happen. So better to play on the long side than not, but be cautious of these areas of supply. So this is the reason why. And also another very important thing to know about market timing. I'm a market timer as well. I try to time my entries to get, you know, as little pain as possible so that it goes in the direction you want almost immediately. So if you look, we've had 3 days, including last week, to the upside, and we're close to supply levels. The odds decrease on a continuation of this move to the upside, and you can see where we are. We're coming back to this area where we dropped. We've dropped there again. It's weakening, but we could still get a little pullback here, which is what we're seeing a little bit now. Now, you can call that a Trump tweet, or you could just call it supply. You can say, you know, there's a saying that we say, or I say to all my traders, the news could change markets, but most often than not, the news just makes the markets move quicker than what was going to happen anyway. Yeah. So it's not the news moves markets, supply and demand moves markets, and that will never change. That's always been the case in any market. So if you can understand where supply and demand is, those are the areas in which the market's going to move between and turn. And in uptrends, obviously, we break levels of supply or resistance and move to higher levels, and in downtrends the other way. So it's just understanding which direction the market's moving and then positioning yourself and managing risk. So that's the reason why I think potentially to the upside, but be cautious, we've got big areas of supply above.
Yeah, once again, you know, not a whole lot of controversy on the show, but I like what you kind of hinted at with the news. And it's like, I think it was either Greg Morris or Schaubacher. They both have similar quotes. Schaubacher going back a long ways. Greg Morris still around, obviously. And basically he said, to paraphrase, all the fundamentals in the world will be sort of held hostage to what the chart will allow. And I guess you could throw in news to that too, and then boil it down even further, like you said, supply and demand. Once again, not enough controversy in the show. But let's go over to Neil. He's a pretty controversial fellow. Neil, take it away.
It's funny what you're just saying, Dave, because about the fundamentals. Does anyone here remember when silver hit $50 an ounce?
I do. I was fairly young, and I had a silver collection worth about 10 grand. I was pretty excited about it. That was my first lesson in bubbles.
Okay. I'm in San Diego. I go for a walk in La Jolla, and for some reason, I get in a conversation with a guy, and we're overlooking some seals, and I got in talking what I was doing, and he says, yeah, what do you think about silver, huh? $50. I thought to myself, it is the top. Today is the top. Today is the top. I must sell. And I swear to you, if that happens, or if a taxi driver is telling you he's buying .com stocks, like a 99, 2000.
Bitcoin.
And the very next day, I wrote to everyone. I said, sell silver, sell silver. I got some scathing emails. I got invited to a party that week. Another situation, I told the guy that, yeah, I told everyone to sell silver. And he looks at me and he starts kind of getting upset. I don't understand silver. You don't understand it because silver's used in electronics as well. And I said, yeah, that's already priced in. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah. Now it's for sure. Now I'm going to start looking at short, like buying some puts. Anyway.
Do you think that that's an honest question?
Yeah.
Do you think that that's where a lot are with index investing right now?
Because
I look at my sister-in-law who came to me and was like, hey, should I buy Bitcoin, right? During that time period, that like right at the top. And then she's like my shoeshine boy. Like when she comes to me for ideas, I know that market's probably done.
Well, that's perfect. Never teach her anything.
I'm not.
I don't, on the money you make.
She's blocked. But no, I look at that as like, you know, like a lot of people are just like plowing into a lot of these index funds right now. And I think to myself, you know, like, okay, like where's the point at which people would say, you know what, there actually isn't a good reason to buy these, you know, and the risk reward is maybe not as great as it was before. Because if everyone's blindly investing in index funds, who's the last person holding the, you know, holding the stick?
Yeah, okay. I think that's a really good point. I remember back in the late 90s when I was in school, everyone said, I don't need a broker. I just buy the index funds. They beat 90% of mutual funds, you know, and back then interest rates were, I still remember mortgage rates and houses were 8%. And what people don't realize about stocks is that inflation goes into stocks as much or more than earnings. If you look back at the last 100 years, I mean, once we went off the gold standard, stocks used to pay huge dividends. Now they don't. And I actually got a chart here that I wanted to bring up about money supply. Did this show up?
Not yet.
Okay. So this is the M2 money supply, includes stocks, mutual funds, cash. And we have now 14 trillion. And you look back at 2000, we're at about 4 trillion. And it just, this is basically what the inflation rate is. Inflation rate goes into stocks. In the last 10, 15 years, I calculated this. There's no such thing as no inflation in the last 10, 15 years, like the Fed says. Inflation's been compounding at about 5 to 6% every year. That's the increase in the money supply. So basically, I look at that. And then you look at periods where there was not much increase in the money supply at all. Interest rates were high. Banks weren't lending. And now banks are lending like crazy. And I think it's probably going to get better. We don't have too many. I mean, I think it can go on for a couple more years, really. But I think we have to be careful as well. You know, I see seminars out there, you know, I'll teach you how to manage your money. Oh, yeah, this is the classic. This is a classic. And I really think it's the time where you got to start looking for these things happening all around you. Even a friend of mine who's in the energy business right now, his firm said that they cannot grow organically anymore. They have to grow through acquisition. I thought to myself, aha, okay. And a lot of times people think, oh, mergers, acquisitions, great for the market. Economy's great. I say, no, that's the top of a market. Why would a company buy another one with their stock now if they think their stock's going to keep going up 20% a year? Why would they do it? But really the real classic when you know the top is when you have a party and you have your broker there, you invite your broker and he's the guest of honor and makes a speech. You really know that's it.
Yeah. A couple of things, Neil, you touched upon something about the indexing and all. And some of that could be actually a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I had a friend who worked for a big money management firm, and he may still be there, but he explained to me, he says, you know how it works? And I'm like, I don't know what you mean. He goes, well, a lot of these fund guys will claim to be stock pickers, but what they will do is they'll set up a portfolio to where it'll mirror the S&P without buying all 500 stocks. And then they might play around a little bit, but they want to keep their job and keep their bonuses. That's probably why most of these funds look a lot like the S&P 500 itself. And that's just, they want to keep their jobs. The other thing I wanted to talk about real quick, as far as bubbles are concerned, I do love bubbles. You just have to have a chair ready for when the bubble bursts. And that Bitcoin bubble, I did okay in. And then in the end, I got hurt a little bit, but I was scaling out as I went along and had a trailing stop and got stopped down. It was a pretty fun ride. But bubbles go a lot further than most people are willing to believe or expect. And what I like about that Bitcoin bubble was everybody was really poo-pooing it as it began to go parabolic. And that's what had me excited about it. And that's why it went a little further than I think most people thought it would before it finally did come back in. And so, but I agree with the shoeshine boy and everything else that you guys are talking about too. But I do like bubbles, but you just have to recognize when you're in one, don't let it go to your head. I think I was guilty of that in 1999, as were most people. And it was a good lesson to learn, but ride the bubble and just have a chair ready for when it pops. Neil, you had said that you had to try try to chime in on something? Sorry.
Oh, I don't know. Just, I mean, you'll definitely see these things happening around you at the huge tops and the huge bottoms. And basically, if anyone calls you an idiot or crazy at a bottom, you know that you're absolutely right. And I mean,
gotcha.
2009-10, I told people to buy houses in Las Vegas for $80,000 for a totally decent, nice house. And people said, oh, you're stupid, Vegas. Yeah, nah, no one's going to go there. And yeah, so if anyone laughs at you at the bottom, you're right. And,
good point.
If you're getting out at the top, and they'll tell you stocks only go anywhere and that's up. And you say to yourself, weren't you in the eighth grade in the last crash? So, you know, so.
Yeah, well, you know, an interesting point that I read a while back is that, and I personally witnessed this quite a bit. I think everybody here is old enough to have seen a few drawdowns, but every asset class at some point in your life will lose half of its value, at least 50% of its value. And that's something that if you're a little newer to trading and investing or whatever you want to call it, you tend to not understand these things. It's what do they call it? You're competently unconscious, or I forget what the psychologist term.
There's four different ones.
Once you live through a couple of 50% drawdowns, you begin to catch on. Go ahead, Neil. What's that?
No, go ahead, Dave. I'll send you.
Okay. Anyway, I was getting sidetracked. Mike, let's go over to you before I forget. And I know I need to answer the question on market direction too. So I haven't forgotten that, Dave, in case you're wondering. But Mike, any developing events that you want to discuss? I think that's where we were when we last left off.
I'm just watching. I just made money on Twitter while we guys are sitting here. I've been trading.
There you go.
Twitter, you know, the big news over the weekend, they shut down 70 million accounts, and the CEO just came out and said all the accounts closed were not active for at least 30 days or more, and the stock just popped, and call sweepers came screaming into it. And there he is. It's up a buck something already, almost $2 off the lows.
Wow. In
about 10 minutes. So overall, guys, yeah, do I think that we have a possible bubble currently forming? Sure. But, you know, we've been, we had this huge move from the election through January of this year. We had our first correction where we got a 12% correction. Right, we hadn't had a correction in 2+ years, and you look at this on the SPY and you say, well, since then we've been making a series of higher highs and higher lows, right? And when I look at my chart and I pull that up and I look at this, right, you can see the SPY, you know, higher lows off the 200-day, lower highs, and at some point soon this is going to break, right? One way or the other, this is going to break. Right now we're in a bullish mode. We got the shorts trapped. We're heading up, and if you want to know what to watch, watch the IWM. The IWM has been leading the markets for the last couple months. If it's going up, the markets are going up. If it's coming in, the markets are coming down. You can see how this turn and ran back before the SPY did, and it's been leading it. Until this changes, and I really think until the tariffs are to resolve, they're going to keep hiding in small caps, which aren't affected by the tariffs. And this is the one to keep your eye on. My thoughts.
Well, I tend to agree with you on that, Russell, and you stole a little of my thunder. I'm going to talk about that too.
Sorry.
That's okay. Again, not enough controversy. But you did remind me of a couple of things I wanted to show. So I'm thank you for that. First of all, I think the S&P is headed higher. I think it was Simon that said path of least resistance. I like that line of thinking. Again, no controversy. And it's just because it's going up recently and it's going up longer term. These are what I call the bow tie moving averages. It's a 20-day exponential, a 30-day exponential, and a 10-day simple. And I like the way they interact together. And often major tops and bottoms can be called with this, but only after coming off of major highs and major lows. So I was a little nervous back here. We had that bow tie form earlier this year, late last year. That was a little scary. But so far, after a bit of a sell-off, we've been recovering ever since. One thing that I've recently began. I've looked at it on and off over the years, but one thing that I've been kind of fascinated with is I recently had my indicators published by MetaStock, and one of the indicators they published was called Daylight, and that's just, or Daylight is what they may have called it in MetaStock, and that's just where your lows of the, whatever you're looking at, whatever market you're looking at, are greater than the moving average. And what's pretty cool, and I have a bunch of other slides on this if you go and look at some of the presentations that have been on YouTube recently, but you could see that you had downside Daylight or Daylight throughout this bear market, and that began, believe it or not, in late 2007, early 2008, and then obviously since that bear market, this long bull market run we've been in, we haven't seen much downside Daylight. We had a little bit if you look back in 2015, 2016. Now this is a weekly chart and a 50-day simple moving average. I don't sit around and wait for everything to roll over before I get out because I do use stops. And if you go back and look at the model portfolio back in 2015 and 16, you can see that we were doing quite a bit of shorting, and then we made a little money on that, got stopped out, we started getting long again. So longer term, as I think Simon was pointing out with some of those longer term charts, even the monthly chart, we are in this longer term uptrend. We did have one little tiny kiss of that moving average, So far, so good. When you come back, or one thing to look at on the weekly, though, is we are a little bit sideways in here, even though the longer-term trend remains intact. Now, let's just take a look real quick at the shorter-term chart. You can see we're sideways pretty much for all of 2018, but we are pushing up against this little bit of resistance in here. And so I'd like to see us get through this before I feel a little bit better about the market. Take a look at the NASDAQ, though, and then I just want to show you one more real quick. I want to talk about that Russell. Over the intermediate term, we've had a nice thrust higher followed by a pullback. Unfortunately, that pullback dropped below this prior breakout, and that had me a little concerned. But usually in a situation like this, a few big updates makes all the difference in the world. And so far, we've had those few big updates. We're just off of all-time highs. As a trend follower, or some people say a trend following moron, I'm not going to argue with that. If you go back in and look at the timing research shows for the trade of the week, if you go back a few weeks, you'll notice that I recommended the IWM, which Mike was just talking about a few minutes ago. And I agree with him. So far, nice thrust higher, nice pullback. I didn't know why it was headed higher, but that sounds like a pretty good reason. So now I know. Usually I just look at charts and then later find out by accident why the market actually went up. But so far, so good. Nice rally out of this. Nice little trigger on a pullback. And I like to see this, especially as a guy who trades mostly smaller cap type of issues. I'm more interested in less inefficient issues, but I will trade occasionally Forex. So as far as this week, I think we're headed up. I think the path of least resistance, once again, is higher. And I'm not going to argue with the market for now as a trend follower. And you can use whatever metric you want. I just use occasionally, that is, and I don't use a whole lot of moving averages, but I use a few moving averages, as you can see, usually mostly a blank chart. But so far, we're headed higher. We're pulling away from the moving average, bumping up against a little resistance. So I'll give it a confidence of 60% on that. Kirk, we're going to go back to you. And the question of the week, let me make sure I get it right. I read it earlier, but I want to reread it. What sort of hedging or portfolio protection strategies do you implement in your trading or investing?
I think it depends on the situation. It's been, by the way, it's been interesting to see you guys talking charts because I'm not a classic chartist, I guess. And so much more of my style is expected probability and it's much more of a data-driven approach. So so I like seeing what you guys all have to say, which is interesting. I think my approach for hedging is really depends on the portfolio at the time. So like right now, our portfolio is very much neutral to slightly bullish and tilt, right? So I wouldn't be hedging necessarily anything right now because I'm positioned for maybe a move higher already, or maybe a slight move higher, I guess. So fading up, right? But if that were the case, then I think some natural hedges that you could use on the option side would be to add some spreads. So whether it's directional spreads or credit spreads, if you want to do it that way, you could also start transitioning positions higher by rolling up contracts. My approach on that is always to take it on a week by week basis. So I think a lot of people probably overhedge their position and spend too much money on insurance, which is kind of crappy because it ends up biting them in the end. So I take it on a weekly approach. So I look at my portfolio weekly, and if it's not, you know, perfectly centered, I'll start transitioning it, you know, wherever the direction needs to be.
Well, if you need to learn charts, I put the back of my business card up here. Literally, this is the back of my business card. One all the way to the left, it says uptrend. The one in the middle says downtrend. And then the one to the right is no trend or sideways. And now you know why they call me a trend following moron. But, you know, I'm tongue in cheek with all this, but you'd be surprised how many people will fight trends because there's some really good reason why a market shouldn't be going up. But as I often preach as Bill Clinton, unless you're Bill Clinton, what is, you know, so...
Well, I think I find it fascinating, like the whole mentality of doing it, because I'm just like totally being honest. Like I've never been really good at picking. Like I realized that early on when I started, I tried to do the day trading thing. I tried to do I've just been bad at picking, and whether that was because I was ignorant starting out or didn't know how to read charts right away, you know, I just gravitated naturally into, you know, finding some sort of system or approach that was less dependent on market movement in the direction I wanted necessarily, as opposed to some other, you know, element. So I guess I find it interesting because I think there's really good pickers out there. I think people can learn to do it. I think it's an art for sure. It's just not something I've ever really mastered. And that's okay. Like I built my system around that, you know, realizing I'm not good at doing that.
Gotcha. Well, are you using volatility strategies or what are your directional strategies? Or are you using directional strategies at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, like I definitely get bearish and bullish on things. I think when it comes down to is like some simple technicals is what I use. So we did a lot of research on technicals. I think there's a lot of good momentum ones that probably work better than others. factors, you know, the RSIs, the CCIs, and the right settings. So things that I'm like really bearish on right now, EWW, XLU, or I'll even try to bring up some charts here real quick and show you. Those are ones I think are you know, just I look at those right now and I think to myself, like, there's probably no possible, or at least the path of least resistance, right, is lower, right? If there is going to be a move, it's probably not going to be necessarily a continuation move. Can you see my chart here? Did I bring it up?
Sure, cool.
So like, I look at these, and I'm like, you know, at short term, like, that's such a huge parabolic move. Like, okay, I'll play this with options, right? And I'll, you know, sell a spread above the market and give myself a margin for error. Same thing with XLU. I think XLU and like started to break. We actually made a couple trades in this last like 4 or 5 days. And so it took a little bit for, I guess, for it to break. But, you know, some of these I'll definitely get directional on when they get overextended. Otherwise, though, like, I do most of my trading pretty much neutral. I try not to pick direction. I try to trade within a range. I realize that, you know, short premium and duration are probably the two, you know, best things for my portfolio. So yeah, so I'll get directional for sure. That's fun. I don't think it's the core of what I do.
Gotcha. All right, Simon, same question.
Well, that's interesting. So I don't really do hedging per se, but what I do is the three types of management: money management, trade management, and what's the third management? Money management, trade management, and one of them is position sizing, yeah, which is basically, I guess, money management. So money management. So basically, you don't want to risk more than you should on any one particular trade, and I use stops as well. So I know what my risk is ahead of time. I try to price in a little bit of slippage as well to give myself a little bit of room. Sometimes if you get, you know, an fast moving market, your stop gets hit and then you get filled with a bit of slippage. So I can try and build that in. So I'm managing risk, basically, and managing risk and looking at reward to risk. So, and that's basically my approach to trading from a risk management, money management, and trade management perspective. That's the third one. Money management, risk management, and trade management. So money management is a big overall picture of how much you're going to put on, how many trades you're going to take at once, you know, how much money do you have on the line in any one particular time. Trade management is, once you're in the trade, how do you manage that trade? And I do very much like what Dave was doing. I like to kind of manage my risk on the trade and then, you know, make money on the first initial burst of the trade, whatever, in whatever direction you're trading in, and then let part of it just go as far as it goes. Yeah. And manage the, you know, that way, you know, there's some very, it's almost like a kind of scalping type swing strategy, but that's more on the trade stroke money management of how you can manage a trade so that you can be in a risk-free position. And, you know, because you've already taken a large part of your position off on that initial move, and then you leave one to run. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You save me a lot of breath when I get to my answer. Thank you. Neil, do you do any hedging over there? Hey, Neil, turn your camera off. We'll put some clothes on. Hey, there's your controversy right there. Who's that girl in the background?
Now we have a show.
Who's that girl in the background? Put it back on. All right.
Yeah, it's real hot where I am.
Where are you?
I'm in a sauna, Dave. I'm doing the show from a sauna.
In the sauna.
You know, hedge funds were originally started as hedge funds because they actually hedged. You know, they tried to get fertility, but they sure don't do that anymore. Right. They lack out of themselves and blow themselves up. So I'll talk about leverage a little bit. I like to trade triple leverage ETFs because I really specialize in making and picking the perfect entry point. And when you pick the perfect entry point, you can put more in the position size. So I have a position size trading calculator that's going to calculate, you know, from where you get in, where the stop is, and how much you're going to put in the trade. And it outperforms equal weight. So I think the last gentleman who was talking about, you know, managing the trade when you're in. So that's really important. Yeah. And yeah, that's it.
I was a guest on another show once, and I said, you want me to turn my webcam on? He says, no, we have a no webcam rule because I don't want to show sweaty guys in the basement. So a lot of us obviously work from home. And so.
Well, it took a long time to get fiber optics in the sauna here, Dave. So,
all right, Mike, let's go over to you. Maybe you could save us.
I could try.
You do any hedging over there? You're an option guy, so yep, I imagine you probably are familiar with hedging.
I hedge all the time. And really what I look to do is I do manage my positions, and in my day trading account I don't tend to do much of a hedge, although I will short on that account and go stuff. But in my large account where I have a lot of long-term positions, I watch the VXX, the VIX. And whenever the VIX gets down below 12, and if you have have a lot of risk on, I highly recommend taking a hedge on it. And I usually do about a 1 to 10. So if I have $100,000 in risk on, I'll take about a $10,000 hedge, maybe a little smaller. And my goal is for the hedge to go off and to expire worthless. And if it does, I trade aggressively against it and I'm good. This way, if I get caught in a downturn, I got something there. So when the VIX comes down, you know, when it gets under 12, and you can see last year, I mean, you know, cheap hedges, there were cheap hedges. And I used to use the VXX. The VXX is my favorite tool for doing hedges because it trades very much like the VIX. It's not an ETN. It's not leveraged. It's not one of the like UVXY. So I trade against that and I use that there within that. And, you know, and you use that for your hedge. You know, you pick, you know, whatever ratio you want. If you're not in very aggressive stocks that move big, then go to like a 5% or so of the hedge on the account. But this will keep you safe, allow you to trade aggressively and keep those positions open. And the thing you always got to do is when you have to pay attention to the market, because if the hedge starts to work, right, and you're making money on the hedge, at that point, if you have to pick where the market you think has reached that bottom area and take it off, because there's no sense in letting that then go red again. At that point, you take your profits, you wait for the market to come back in like it has. You get a reading like we're getting again on the VX, the VIX, right? We're under 12, under 13 today, heading down to the 12 range. You get under 12, you go out there and you take another hedge on it. You just keep rotating this. And I like to do it about 2 to 3 months out. So I have plenty.
Mike, good stuff. And I'm looking forward to looking into that further. One thing that I would encourage you to do, I did a lot of back in my prior life, I did a lot of VIX research, and we were using a lot of fixed levels. And one thing I found out is those levels do change. So one thing that I might throw out as a little fodder for research for you is look for that VIX to get stretched, and you could just use a simple moving average. I mean, literally reversion to the mean type of thing. But also, in addition to your levels, just see if it gets a little stretched and see if that helps you when you're looking into those that type of position.
Thanks,
and man. if you want to talk offline, we can talk about that. But good stuff, and I appreciate what you pointed out. One thing we might have a tiny bit of controversy here, and is because I don't believe in hedging, because let's say the market's headed higher and you're long that market. Well, you buy a hedge, and that hedge is going to cost you money. So that hedge is going to lose money, and the money you make when the market goes up might be offset by the money you make when the market goes down by the hedge. So let's say you have to reset that hedge, cost you money again. Let's say the market finally goes down. Well, that hedge will go up in value. You're going to lose money on the hedge and then make money. I'm sorry. You're going to make money in the hedge, lose money. See how complicated it gets? And you're going to lose money on the overall market. So the bottom line is it's very expensive and complicated unless you're doing something like Mike. I know my friend, not to name drop, but just to let you know that it's somebody who knows what he's doing. Larry McMillan, I'm sure he does a lot of hedging type of strategies using the VIX and things like that that make a lot of sense, but it gets really complex really fast. And a hedge sounds great on paper, but in reality, it's a very difficult thing. So I would urge somebody, I personally do not hedge on anything. My hedging would be kind of like what Simon was saying, in that I scale out of positions and I use a trailing stop. And hopefully, and I know I just said hope, but hopefully I'm with a position for a long, long time. And yes, in the end, I will get stopped out and give up some of those open profits, but hopefully, and there's that word again, but hopefully the net, for instance, if I'm long a market and I take partial profits, let's say here, and that market keeps going higher, and in the end, I stop out. Well, from, let's say I got in here, from here to here is still a pretty good run. You can't look at that last little drawdown and get all depressed. You have to look at how much money you made from here to here. I have clients all the time. I had one guy literally on Friday who was in a position that I'd recommended as an ancillary setup, made a lot of money, but in the end, he lost a lot, but he ended up like 100% gain overall. And I said, look, if it's bumming you out, just send me that money and you don't have to worry about that money anymore. So yeah, in the end, it will end badly as a trend follower. That's something you have to wrap your head around and you have to be willing to accept. But as a general statement, I really think it's very, very important to keep it simple, especially if you're a little bit newer to trading. And I would not hedge again, and I know I'm beating the dead horse here, unless you're very well versed on the subject and you fully understand what's going on. All right, I think that's enough.
But a hedge allows you to, Dave, the only thing I have is a hedge allows you to trade aggressively. If you're trading and you don't want to give up your positions, you don't want to manage a lot of positions, you put that hedge on it and you forget about it. Again, you size it to be lost, 100% loss. Your hope is it expires worthless and you just keep trading and making money, right? That's how I view a hedge. So you're not managing it. You're just kind of there.
You, but what you're doing is a lot more complex than like if you're picking individual stocks and trying to.
But then you have a lot to manage. So if you take one overall hedge for your account, then you have one position to manage versus having to manage. Some of these people have like 10 or 12 positions open at once.
Right.
That's my thought.
Yeah, I know. And I'll definitely explore the VXX a little further and revisit some of those things. But as a general statement, at least with my style, if you're picking individual stocks, a hedge is more trouble than it's worth and a lot more expensive than it's worth. But I hear you. That's what I'm saying. You know what you're doing, a little more complex type of position strategy, and then you're getting aggressive against the hedge. So believe me, I totally hear where you're coming from.
So
okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, can I chime in here? Because I think you guys are talking about it. This is an interesting concept because I think people talk a lot about hedging, and what you're talking about, Dave, is 100%, you know, the stock hedge, which I can tell you guys, like, that doesn't work. We've done so much research on this. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars on options hedging for stocks, and it doesn't work. I mean, the cost of insurance is just way too great. But I think what somebody else was saying, whether it was Mike or somebody, is using a hedge against other leveraged positions becomes very attractive. And it is a VIX function. You know, it's a function of how cheap the insurance is or how expensive the insurance is. One thing that we've backtested a lot that I think, you know, could be good, and we've done some, you know, work with hedge funds on this too, is using some sort of ratio spread on the VIX, right? So trying to reduce some of the cost of that hedge just a little bit, but keeping so much of the upside potential so that you don't get burned necessarily if the VIX stays low under 12 for, say, 6 months, right? So that might be another thing. But I think it's two different talks, right?
I agree.
Options hedge and stock hedge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to that, especially once you bring the VIX in. And, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but I've seen people that talk about things that should really know better that are just flat out wrong on some of these derivatives and all, and just don't fully understand. They'll go on TV and talk about them, and it's like, that's just wrong. And it's not just me like seeing somebody else explain to me, you realize what he just said is completely wrong. And he's on national TV talking about these things. So it gets really muddy really fast. As a keep it simple guy and trying to bring people along to get them up to speed, it's like I just try to avoid some of these more complex strategies and derivatives.
I agree 100%. I think the simple answer is don't hedge. You know, like, that's, unless you want to get super complicated with it, it's just a cost of insurance and business that doesn't pay out.
Yeah, I agree. All right. We'll have to do it quickly since we're running a little long, but a new feature to the show is a trade of the week. So if you guys have anything that you want to show this week, I'm not seeing a whole lot of setup simply because my methodology requires a market pullback. So I'm going to go ahead and pass this week. If you took the IWM trade from a couple of weeks ago, go ahead and start looking to scale out of that and trail a stop higher. That would be my only advice on that. But Kirk, since we have you have a trade of the week you'd like to show us. And then Simon, if you have something you want, you can go ahead and get it queued up. Kirk just froze up. So yeah, he's muted. All right. Simon, if you have a trade of the week, let us know. And we'll circle back to Kirk.
Am I back?
Oh, he's back.
Yeah, you're back.
Sorry. I was working in the background. No. So here's my screen if you guys can see it. But the trade that we like is, like I said, an XLU short premium. We have sold a bunch of contracts at 51, 52, 53 on the option side. So we're just looking for it to stay somewhere in the 50 to 54-ish type range over the next month. So these are August contracts. So, I mean, look, I think that this is one of those stocks that, you know, like, this ETF is going to get pulled back because people are buying the markets now. They're going to dump utilities. But I just don't see it going that much lower. So, I mean, that's a trade that we like right now. That's, one of a couple.
Cool. All right, Simon, let's go to you.
Okay, so here was the trade of the week. I think last time I was on the show was oil, and it was down here, and some of the people that were watching the show actually sent me messages afterwards how much money they made in oil, and they rode this all the way up. You see this? See the charts?
Awesome.
We talked about oil trade. So again, oil is another one that's still on the kind of hot list. We've been kind of long oil since down here, since right down here. That's when we called it on the long side, and it's nice run, and we're looking for it to continue moving up to the 100 mark. So we're looking to buy, and this was the pullback to buy, and it went up. So we may get another pullback here now, and I'm looking for this to move up to back up to 100 area.
Simon, are you trading futures when you trade oil?
Kind of. Yeah, this is the futures, it's the CL.
Okay.
There's some people that are trading CFDs on oil as well.
So okay, we're not allowed to. We don't have access to CFDs in the U.S. as you probably know. Years ago, I met some guys that actually set up an office in Chicago. We're waiting for the rules to change. I don't know if they're still playing ping pong in their office waiting, or they finally shut them down, but that was probably 15 years ago. Neil, do you have a trade of the week for us? And while we're waiting on Neil to put his clothes on, Mike, if you have something, let us know.
I do. I have a high-risk trade for you this week, and it's on Amazon. All right, so Amazon has Prime Day next week, and it has a tendency to run into it. And you see this nice curl. You look at the daily chart. You got this nice curl above all the moving averages. Bollinger Bands are getting really tight. And then you combine this with option flow today, and I'm in it. Look at the flow into the 1750s today. 7,000 of these things have have traded now today. Now, that doesn't mean they're all going to stick, right? Some of these, a lot of these are going to trade out. We know that. But there's been heavy volume coming into this all day long. And that looks like a magnet, that 1750 number, whether that's tomorrow or the next day. So if you're looking for a high risk trade for a name that has an event coming, I love playing names into event. I don't want to play the event. I love to play names into the event. So take a look at Amazon here, and maybe you guys catch lightning in a bottle and get one of those 20 or 40 point days and have, you don't need a lot. One call on this. If you have a small account, you buy one call at about 575 right now, and you just see what happens. This thing could double or triple in an hour if it really starts to move.
So you're saying, what is it? Buy the rumor, sell the news, or whatever.
Yeah. buy the event, right? It's, you know, they're going to run it. It's like the banks. The banks typically run into earnings, right? Then earnings come and they typically sell off, because what could the banks possibly announce that's going to make us happy on Friday? They already declared their buyback and dividends.
Gotcha. Hey, Mike, while we have you, since we're running a little late, do you have any closing thoughts or anything else you want to tell us about Alpha Shark or smart option trading before we sign off here?
Thanks for having me on. If you guys are interested, check me out at smartoptiontrading.com. You'll get you come in, you see my real-time option flow. It's $25 for the first 30 days, $100 every month thereafter. You get your morning videos, your nightly recaps. I go live throughout the day and all the flow and news throughout the day. For $25 is a get-to-know-me period, and you cancel any time. You're going to spend more than that going out for a couple beers, Dave. So give me a shot. Love to have you on board. Thanks for having me here again, guys, and have a great week.
There you go. Okay, let's go over to you, Kurt. Any closing thoughts?
No, it was good. I enjoyed it. I like seeing all the other people's opinions. I love, you know, kind of seeing what other traders have to say and think. So yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for being here. We enjoyed having you. Simon?
Yeah, hi. Great. Also great to be on the show again. But I want to say, anyone on the show who wants to come to this webinar, it's brand new material. One simple adjustment to 7 times more profit. Tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern time, you can, the link's here. You can get it from my website here as well. You go to the tradesmartforex.com. One simple adjustment to 7 times more profit. I'm going to show you some real results here on a real account, and how to find your biggest trading demon and 3 steps that you need to follow in order to become a successful trader. So this is the topic, and I invite anyone watching this show to come and join, sign up for the webinar, and thanks a lot for being on the show again.
All right, cool. And Simon, I'll be in touch with you soon. Neil, let's go over to you. Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, maybe he's having...
Trouble finding some clothes.
He got eaten by the sauna.
Poor Neil. Poor Neil. Drink some water there, Neil. We want to see you back soon. We love having you on the show, man. Just to wrap it up from my standpoint, daviddavelandry.com is my email. Get to know me first and check out this davidlandry.com/CFN. Put your information in and I'll give you a bunch of goodies and a bunch of good information. Like I said, you can get all 3 of my books for free. Get to know me, get to know the methodology before you spend any bucks. And that would be awesome if you did that. I think I'll go ahead and let you wrap it up, David Cosman. It's just running long, but I do want to thank everyone. It was a good show. I really enjoyed being here once again. So thank all 3 of you guys, four of you guys actually, for being here today. And Cosminer, since we're running a little late, I'll go ahead and let you wrap things up.
All right. Thanks, guys. Just a reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube or your favorite podcast service. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or show episodes. Analyze Your Trade, AYT show was off last week, but be back tomorrow at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. Christian Fromhertz, Jim Kenny, Larry Gaines, and Dean Jenkins will be on that one. And just want to thank all my guests again for this week. Kirk Duplessis of OptionAlpha.com, thanks for being on the show for the first time. Okay. And Simon Klein of TradeSmartForex.com, Neil Batho of TraderReview.net, Mike Pisani of AlphaShark.com and SmartOptionTrading.com, and Dave Landry of DaveLandry.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Good night, everybody.